It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio as we prepare for basically the 4th of July week. I hope wherever you are in the great outdoors that you have a wonderful time, a safe time, and that you enjoy it with your family and friends. That's what the great outdoors is all about, particularly this time of the year. I've got several topics this week to start with. I'm going to talk about plastics, which more and more we read, the worse and worse it sounds, about the microplastics in virtually everything, and including in our bodies. There's now estimated, and again, when I use these numbers, always I say I don't know how they come up with them, but they're the best numbers we have. It's estimated there are 2 million tons of plastic in our oceans right now. And we all know about the big plastic area in the Pacific, the big garbage zone. So in Sarasota Bay, through the Brookfield Zoological Society in Chicago, they've been testing dolphins for plastics, microplastics in their breath. They also have been testing dolphins in Barrett Terrier Bay in Louisiana. And 100% of the dolphins that they tested in Sarasota Bay and in Barrett Terrier Bay, they found microplastics in the dolphin's breath. This just indicates the severity of the plastics that we have throughout our system, in the air, in the water, and this idea that plastics, you know, are really microplastics are a legacy of plastic bottles and everything else. Plastic bags, they never break down. They just get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and they get carried in the wind currents as they get smaller. So it's something that we're becoming keenly aware of. It's something we should do something about as well, which is why you often hear me talk about use paper. Help us cut trees that need to be cut for pulp and paper. Paper does not turn into microplastics. We need sustainable forests, and one of the reasons we have such problems with our forests is because, of course, the pulp market has collapsed with the elimination of newspapers and all the demand that was once there, and the idea that paper bags are bad and plastic bags are good is absolutely backwards. Paper bags are good. Plastic bags are bad. Shifting from that to a story that's taking place and breaking actually as I do the show is the discussion of whether or not the U.S. Migratory Bird Banding Department will continue to be funded with the current bill that's before Congress, the current budget bill. The banding program in the United States goes back about 100 years. It started with migratory waterfowl to try to figure out where they have gone. It's estimated that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, through its banding program, has banded some 77 million birds, many of those in the last 50 years. The majority of birds banded are waterfowl, but we banded everything from warblers to owls to hawks, egrets, every kind of bird the Fish and Wildlife Service has put a band on, and it's given us incredible data as to the movements of birds. In the case of waterfowl, birds that are recovered by hunters, the data goes in as to age relationships of birds, how long have they lived, what kind of a year do we have on the breeding grounds. Without the migratory bird banding that takes place, we really are flying blind. But it appears that the Migratory Bird Banding Division of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service might be eliminated. And I would offer, having been around this for a while, that we need to continue with banding of birds as we are until new technology enables us to track birds in ways that we don't commonly now. And I'll give you a great example. Banding of waterfowl, which is what drove the program, it was assumed based upon bands that the ringneck duck population of the southeastern United States, particularly of Florida, it was assumed that almost all of those ringnecks came from the Atlantic Flyway coming down out of New Brunswick to move down the coast to Florida. Well, we've learned in recent years that, in fact, that's not true at all. We put transmitters on birds, trapped them and put lightweight transmitters on them that then emitted signals. And what we found is that, in fact, a great number, if not the majority, of ringneck ducks wintering in northeast Florida and southeast South Carolina and down into Georgia are coming from the Northwest Territories and the boreal forests, not coming from the Atlantic Flyway at all. And new technology has made this possible. So there it to understand these movements of birds and to understand them in real time. And in fact, one of the things we learned through the radio transmitter program is that birds were being shot in the spring. Yes, spring hunting is still permitted for native First Nations people, as they call them in Canada. So on the way north in the spring, as birds are returning to their breeding grounds, hunting is still done by many of the tribes in across northern Canada in the boreal forests. And in fact, ringnecks that have been banded with transmitters in South Georgia, North Florida, in the Thomasville area, flew all the way up to the boreal forests, Cumberland House, the Paw, and further up, only to be shot. So that indicated that there is mortality in the spring still, even though since 1917, spring hunting has been, waterfowl hunting has been outlawed in the United States and Canada through the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. However, First Nations people are exempted from it. But it shows the power of technology in understanding how birds move. Bands are obviously not radio transmitters, but bands paint a picture that ultimately gives us a very good idea of the age dynamics of birds, migratory pattern changes. Radio transmitters are very expensive. Banding is a far less expensive way to get critical data. Furthermore, waterfowl hunting seasons are largely based upon band data returns. Are we shooting too many young birds? Are we shooting too many old birds? What's happening with the population? It tells us how successful hatches have been, etc. So it will be a huge disadvantage to science if the migratory bird banding arm of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is closed down. We would lose what's basically, with the exception of COVID, been uninterrupted for over 100 years. So as we work our way through this, quote unquote, one big beautiful bill, we do find that in this, there are things that are going to be cut or not funded that are part of the fabric of conservation. And I guess we'll have some decisions coming on it. So when I come back, I'm going to talk about Jaws, Steven Spielberg's movie, 50 years later, and what it meant to science and what it meant to sharks and a perception of sharks. Pretty interesting story. Also, if I have a chance, I'm going to talk about land sales with the federal government, which is like ping pong going back and forth, and where that stands today. You're listening to Charlie Potter, Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN Radio. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Hope you're enjoying the show this morning. This is Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Jaws. It says it all. Steven Spielberg's epic movie, released 50 years ago, changed the world, changed the perception of sharks, created awareness of sharks, and was one of, at the time, the all-time most successful movies ever made, helped launch Steven Spielberg's career. What's happened since then? Pretty interesting story in that 50 years ago, we really knew nothing about sharks. We didn't even know how many different kinds of sharks there were. And we came away from the movie Jaws with the belief that the only good shark was a dead shark because it terrified people. Absolutely terrified individuals about great white sharks. And we knew nothing about how they migrated, where they spawned, how long they lived, all the kind of things that you need in science to be able to manage a resource. All we knew is that the mechanical shark that Steven Spielberg put together captivated the interest of the world, terrified swimmers up and down the East Coast, the Pacific, all over the world. Jaws was synonymous with sharks that ate people. Well, in fact, between 1936 and 2018, there had not been a single fatality on the East Coast from a shark, according to the statistics released this week when they were talking about the film. In 2018, a great white shark killed a man off of Cape Cod, and that's the first one in 80 years. There have certainly been lots of shark attacks and shark bites, but no fatalities. And one of the things that's been going on with sharks is there are more of us. There are more people in the water. Our beaches are far more crowded, and therefore the interactions with sharks is going to increase. We, for the first time now in the last 30 years, are beginning to understand through research, a lot of it being done by the Massachusetts Marine Fisheries Group, some being done on the West Coast, we're understanding how many sharks are there. And it turns out that there are actually hundreds of species of sharks. In fact, they believe that there are 500 species of sharks in the world today, subspecies. The most well-known, the great white shark, which is now known to be able to live maybe 70 years or more. So sharks are long-lived, but we still don't know much about where they live, how they migrate, how they breed, what they eat. But we do know, and we've learned, that wherever seals populations have made recoveries, sharks have shown up. Wherever we have a lot of sea lions, sharks have shown up. So they are highly dependent on food sources, obviously, to live, but they also are attracted by certain species, seals being one of them. Last year in southern Maine, a great white shark was sighted within a couple hundred yards of shore, Scarborough Beach, just south of Portland. First time in anyone's memory ever that they had seen a great white shark at Old Orchard Beach and Scarborough Beach, or just off the beach. So sharks are definitely moving north as the water from the Gulf Stream is warming. But 50 years ago, when Jaws was released by Steven Spielberg, it took the world by storm, and it definitely changed the perception of sharks. And here we are today, learning a lot more about them than we did then. We really knew very little about them then. But it's a story that's going to continue to unfold. We're still going to hear about attacks from sharks of people in the water. They are obviously extremely dangerous, but it is something that humans and sharks are going to continue to interact with each other as we continue to populate our beaches and swim in the oceans around the world. We're going to have more and more encounters with sharks. And one of the things that research is doing is trying to figure out how we lessen those encounters. What kind of behaviors do sharks display and how can we utilize those behavior, that knowledge on behavior, to try to reduce conflicts with people. So moving from sharks, I've got just a couple minutes left. I do want to talk about this land sale issue, which has been all over the news. And usually on the Great Outdoors Show, I try to pick up things that, or talk about things that maybe aren't on the front page. But this one is so important and so high profile. Senator Mike Lee of Utah has been the primary proponent of offering that federal lands, Forest Service lands, and BLM lands be sold as part of reducing the federal budget and expanding areas for urban and housing expansion, and also reducing, frankly, the amount of federal land that is owned in Western states. What he's run into is a buzzsaw of opposition, including nearly every senator from Western states who are finding out that, in fact, their constituents don't want the federal land sold. So this is going to be resolved in a way that I guess we didn't think of. The Senate parliamentarian has announced that under the reconciliation bill, that this notion of selling federal lands cannot go forward because it's a new act, and therefore it is not able to be considered under the way it's written, so it's off the table. That lasted about 10 minutes before Senator Lee announced that he would be rewriting the bill, much more narrowly focusing it. But I do think it is pretty much going nowhere. And I've said this for 2 weeks now on the air. It is highly unpopular. Sure, there could be strategic places in the country and on select cases where we do need to trade federal land with private land or maybe even sell some federal land. But not the way they went at it, not the broad brush, not the heavy hand. And whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, it doesn't seem to matter. Overwhelmingly, Americans are opposed to the selling of federal lands. And most of those federal lands are in the West. But there's certainly some Forest Service land in Wisconsin that would have been eligible to be able to be sold. But for right now, due to the rules of the Senate, parliamentarian says you can't do it. Next Sunday morning, when I come back, I'm going to talk about the roadless rule, which is collecting a great deal of attention. Also, I'll have some more news on what's happening in the great outdoors as we work into after the 4th of July weekend. And in the meantime, I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors and a very happy 4th of July. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.